Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Section 10 podcast. Here are your hosts, Jared Carabas, Pete Blackburn, and Steve Perrault.
What's up, and welcome back to the Section 10 podcast, episode 124, presented by Barstool Sports. It is the home of your 81-62 first place Boston Red Sox. My name is Jared Carabas, and I am a certified G and a bona fide stud, and you can't teach that. And this right here, this is Pete Blackburn, and this is number 11 episodes in a row, and you can't teach that. Bada boom, realest guys in the room. Steve, how you doing?
What up, Section 10 in the building?
In the mother fucking building with how many games left? 19 games left in the Boston Red Sox season. I would say it's somewhat early to reflect on the year. The year's not done yet. We still don't know. I think we have a pretty good idea of how the season's going to end, but it's baseball's unpredictable. Sometimes weird shit happens, but to just for one second reflect on coming into this season, or even just back to, let's go back to winter weekend, the three of us, good old Foxwoods, and that was the first time that we saw Chris Sale live in person. So excited. World Series hopes and dreams. Coming off a first place AL East title and a sweep at the hands of the Cleveland Indians, the Red Sox go out and trade for Chris Sale. They unveil him at winter weekend. What was that? January, right?
Yeah, January.
January. So how are we feeling then? And how are we feeling right now?
I mean, in the off season, I for sure thought that the Sox were going to be like World Series favorites. I was in on them going hard line to the World Series. Now, not so much. I mean, it's been an inconsistent season. Have had a couple, more than a couple disappointing performances across the board. Chris Sale's been unbelievable. But I still think that they get a chance. I think they got a chance to make a strong run. They're going to have to really fucking put it together in the postseason, though. And there's a lot that that needs to be solved, and a lot that needs to be proven in the offseason. I mean, in the postseason.
Steven?
Petey's already ready to talk about the offseason. I honestly don't feel much different now than I did when the season was starting. I wasn't...
What?
I don't feel much different. When I was going into the... Wait, all right. Can we run it back?
Yeah, please? Sure.
So heading into the season, Chris Sale, very excited about that. Wasn't fully confident that Rick Porcello... Not obviously it wasn't going to be a Cy Young again, but that was the biggest question mark, I think, for me heading into the season. And sure enough, he has the most losses in baseball.
Yeah, you didn't think he was going to lead the fucking majors in losses, home runs allowed, and hits allowed.
Did not think he was going to be that bad. But after Sale, I don't think you had guarantees in this rotation. Porcello was as close to it as you were going to get. You didn't know what you were going to get with David Price. I don't feel overly confident now. I felt a little more confident when the season started, but it really wasn't like gold bottles. Like, I wasn't all in on, you know, World Series or bust, and I'm not all in on World Series or bust right now.
I thought they were going to have like a really, really strong chance at pushing towards the World Series just because of the offensive performance that they had last year. And, you know, I mean, you only lose David Ortiz. I didn't figure that only losing David Ortiz would do this much damage to the fucking lineup.
The offense is a huge issue, and that's something we could have never expected. Mookie Betts, we probably thought he was going to even go further up from last year. Even though he set the bar very high, I thought he was going to at least do the same stuff this year, and that has not been the case. So, yeah, it's been tough, man. I mean, this is, like you had mentioned, Jared, it's a division champion caliber team. Is this a World Series champion caliber team? I think we're kind of fooling ourselves if we would say that. So it is a disappointment right now.
Yeah, and, you know, I even just going back to winter weekend, I remember being excited about Chris Sale. Like, I remember being like, this is going to be fucking awesome to watch this guy every 5 days. I did not think this was a foregone conclusion that this was a World Series team. And I remember there's a clip from the baseball show where I'm talking to like Lou and Evan, and we're talking about, you know, back in March or whatever it was, like who's the World Series favorite, or the Red Sox World Series favorites. And I was like, hello, the fucking Cleveland Indians like just went to game 7 of the World Series and then got better in the offseason. Like, why are we not talking about the Indians as the automatic World Series favorite? Vegas.
We had that thought then, and we should have that now. Like, I don't think anything has. So that's another huge hurdle where I'm not like Red Sox gold bottles. Like, they're going to go all the way. Like, the Indians, nothing changed.
Vegas thing. Yeah. It's the Vegas thing. Cause the Red Sox were the co-favorites to win the World Series with the Cubs, I think, going into the season.
Yeah.
Things have changed with the Cubs. You know, they haven't had as dominant of a year as they did last year. And then the Red Sox is just like, you know, they take a big step forward here with Chris Sale, but they take a huge step back in losing David Ortiz. And you mentioned Mookie Betts being a guy that a lot of us, or most of us, if not all of us, had high expectations for. You know, if you can compete with Mike Trout in terms of statistics, that gives Red Sox fans a lot of optimism moving forward, especially when, what is this, his age 24 season or his age 25 season? I think he's 24.
He's 24, yeah. He turns 25 in like 3 weeks.
Yeah. So his age 24 season, you obviously expect him to continue to ascend into, like, what is this player? You know, if that's what he is in his age 23 season, what is he in his age 24 season? So there was definitely a lot of excitement, which for me has turned into disappointment. And I know that it's kind of unfair to expect that from Mookie every single year, but being that he was 23 when he had that season, I don't think it's unfair to expect at least coming close to it again in the very next year when you're 24.
Also, it's disappointing because, like, there you lose David Ortiz and you have an opening on the roster and in the clubhouse as the offensive guy in the lineup. To really, like, yeah. There was a chance for Mookie Betts to really seize that opportunity, and he didn't do it this year.
The opposite. And
nobody did.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you guys next, is who has been the biggest disappointment this season? Like, is it Mookie Betts? Because I think Hanley Ramirez definitely fits into that category. I know that, like, you know, when the Red Sox signed Hanley Ramirez, it was 2015. He came here. They stuck him in left field. He was statistically like the second or third worst left fielder in baseball history, and then had a terrible offensive year. He had a great April. He had like 10 home runs in April or something like that. Sucked the rest of the way. Then last year, comes back, has one of the best years of his entire career. And if you want to attribute that to it being David Ortiz's last season, fine. I don't think that it had everything to do with it. I think it had something to do with it. I think it more had to do with him playing first base and being engaged and being out there. But he wanted to play DH. And then in the small sample that he was DH in those first 2 years with the Red Sox, he tore the cover off the ball. So I was optimistic about Hanley Ramirez converting to being a DH, taking over for David Ortiz. He's the heir to Ortiz's throne. That's his idol. And the numbers were great with him as a DH. So now we see, you know, what Hanley can do in a full season as DH, and it's not very good. It's actually quite bad. And I guess if you look at where Hanley's OPS is, Mookie Betts isn't too far away. So if we're that disappointed in Hanley Ramirez, you know, I think we're cutting Mookie some slack, but I also think we should cut Mookie some slack. You know, he's still, put it this way, last year when he had that breakout season, he was 2 years younger than Aaron Judge is right now. So he's definitely still got some things to learn at the major league level. Hanley, more of a proven talent here at the major league level, and you definitely expect much better than what he's given you this season. So I ask the both of you, and you can even factor in Rick Porcello. Like, how do you fucking lead the league in losses and hits allowed and home runs allowed coming off a Cy Young season? So who has been the biggest disappointment so far in 2017? Well, just say 2017.
Xander, yeah, who's going to fix it in the last 2 weeks of the season? Xander also is in that boat. I think you need Hanley, Mookie, and Xander all in the same boat, because between the three of them, you look at their stats and it's just kind of blah. I know Hanley leads the team in home runs. That category shouldn't even really count for this team because no one's hitting home runs. So 22 homers shouldn't really count if you're a Red Sox leader in ding-dongs. But I don't know. If I'm going to pick one, I think I'm going Hanley, because you expected him to take that role over, make it his own thing, and really blow up, or at least do what he did last year. And he's not even close to that. He's not even close to what he was doing last year. And I don't expect anything from him when he's at the plate. Feels like his home runs are all kind of scattered. They never seem to have any kind of rhythm. It seems like you have to light a fire under his ass for him really to get on any kind of two or three game stretch. Xander looks lost at the plate. I mean, the fact that you had to give him days off is really bad. The fact you were at the point in New York where you had to pinch hit for Xander Bogaerts in the ninth, that is terrible. I never thought we would have been at that situation. So I don't know. I'm taking Hanley at one, and then Mookie and Xander are right there for two and three.
Yeah, it'd be hard for me to pick anybody other than Hanley. I mean, I know Mookie's had a disappointing season, but you look at Hanley, he leads the team in home runs, but he has fucking 55 RBIs with 19 games left to go in the season.
Bad.
That is insane.
So bad.
That is awful. So, I mean, like,
that's bad.
And like Jared said, I mean, this was the year for him to settle into the DH role and just fucking mash and just rake and be the offensive leader on this team and in the lineup. And he just fucking just laid an egg. And I mean, I don't know what the plan is, but I mean, the guy's 33 years old, so that doesn't inspire confidence for him moving forward.
Yeah, it's not great. You look at, you know, I guess the expectations coming into the year, and I didn't even mention Xander Bogaerts. Steve, you mentioned Bogaerts. He should absolutely be in that discussion because, I mean, this was a guy who has come close to 200 hits in his, you know, first two or the last two seasons. I think 2015, 2016, he got right near 200 hits. But then you just look at some of these names here. It's no one on the team has an OPS higher than 800. Like, that's fucking terrible. Terrible. That's awful. Like, I'm looking at this right now. Here you go. The highest OPS on the team, if you even want to count it, because he's only played 92 games, I don't even think he qualifies. I set the qualifier at 75 games played. That was to get in the catchers because the Red Sox haven't worked with a starting catcher yet this year. It's been Sandy Leon and Christian Vasquez have been splitting time there pretty much evenly. And Sandy Leon has played 77 games. Vasquez has played 84 games. So if you set the qualifier at 75 games, Dustin Pedroia leads the team with a 791 OPS. And he, again, if you just set that as like a minimum qualifier, he wouldn't even qualify. So Andrew Benintendi leads the Red Sox in OPS with a 788 OPS. He's played 134 games. Then you have Mookie at 777, Mitch Moreland, 764, Hanley at 757, Jackie Bradley at 755, Christian Vasquez, 742, Bogaerts, 722, Chris Young, 715, and then Sandy Leon, 634. So the team OPS between those guys, 752. That is fucking horrendous.
Raise your hand if you predicted Christian Vasquez finishing with a higher OPS than Xander Bogaerts.
Yeah.
Dude, Christian Vasquez at Fenway, he's hitting like 370 at Fenway. That is the craziest stat of the year. Jared, real quick, off of that point, seven of the nine guys in the starting lineup last year hit over 800 OPS. So seven out of the nine were over 800. Now none of them are over 800. So
zero.
It's ridiculous.
Zero. David Ortiz's OPS last year was like over 1,000.
It was 1,000. Sure. It was over 1,000.
Yeah. Motherfucker was fucking 40 years old, which is essentially like 48 in Dominican years. And he has an OPS over 1,000. That's not exactly what you want to see out of an offense that was, I think they outscored the next highest team in the American League by 100 runs. And since we're reflecting here, you revisit the offseason. Edwin Encarnacion wanted to come to Boston. And he's got an OPS of 875. He's in 254, but he has 34 bombs and he's driven in 88 runs. Is that a guy that you maybe should have considered going over the luxury tax for? Because that was the big thing. And then I also had a theory that they didn't sign Encarnacion because they were sort of high on Sam Travis, but he hasn't really, you know, wowed us or taken the reins in the opportunities that he's been given this year. So I don't know. Did the Red Sox sort of miss the boat here? Because now looking ahead, and I mean, it's definitely too soon to look ahead to the offseason. We still have 19 games left. We still don't know if they're going to win the division or play in a wild card playoff or what have you. But just like to look down the road here, are they going to have to make a move for a big bat in the offseason? Because I don't see how there's any other alternative. Like, if you're Dave Dombrowski and you look at what your team has collectively done, your team, the entire team, and Steve, you mentioned how fucking Hanley's what, 33?
That was Petey. That was analytics.
So he's, oh, Petey Analytics?
Yeah.
He's 33. He's not getting any younger. And that is supposed to be your impact bat, your most feared bat. And if I'm a pitcher, I'm not fearing Hanley Ramirez. You just throw him some fucking breaking shit away and he waves at it every single time, every time. So they're going to have to do it. And all the listeners right now are just fucking jerking off. Junkos Stanton, Junkos Stanton. It's got to be Junkos Stanton. You got to get Junkos Stanton. What package would you put for Junkos Stanton? Like, that's the name that's going to come up a lot in the offseason. And they should see what it would take. Because you right now, you don't have anything that's like, yeah, I would never give that up. Like, I'm not giving that up for the fucking best hitter on the planet.
My question is how much do you think that this year's struggles from the lineup as a whole surround the lack of like one central bat in the middle of the order? Like if you,
it's a lot.
If David Ortiz was on this year's team and had, I'm not going to say the same production as he did last year, but similar production, and he was in the four spot or in the three spot, how much do you think that the rest of the lineup changes?
A lot. A lot, because now, you know, it changes the dynamic of it, because you don't have Andrew Benintendi trying to hit cleanup. You don't have Xander Bogaerts hitting third, and it just puts everyone back into their rightful places instead of people just, you know, Mitch Moreland hitting cleanup. Like, you wouldn't see that, because if David Ortiz is hitting third, then you would put Hanley fourth, and it's everything kind of just goes into its place. And it makes a huge difference in terms of, you know, overall, not just like other guys in the lineup, it's just on the team. Like, he has David Ortiz can make things very quickly, you know, a 3-0 ball game in the first inning. And they don't have that guy right now. They don't have that guy that just, you know, oh, it's the third inning. David Ortiz just hit a fucking 3-run bomb. Like, and now the pitcher can go out and pitch with a lead instead of pitching with his asshole clenched for the entire game, because they're not scoring runs for him. And Chris Sale, to his credit, has done a really great job in some cases pitching with little to zero run support. Rick Porcello, another guy, last year led the majors in run support. You got a Cy Young season out of him. This year, he's 50th in run support, and he leads the league in losses. So that's another factor. It's not just the other guys in the lineup. It's how does that affect the pitchers on the mound who get to pitch with the lead?
Yeah, it's a mental thing on both ends. If you have your starter coming into games either at Fenway or against the Red Sox, you want them to fear at least someone in the lineup. You don't want them coming into the game being like, okay, I could basically cruise through this lineup if I have my best stuff tonight. And regardless of if your stuff is good, if you're facing Ortiz, if you're facing Giancarlo Stanton, if you're facing these guys at their best, there's a good chance that they'll still get you. So I think that's the biggest thing right now with the Red Sox. There's no one that opposing pitchers probably fear in this lineup. And that's the first time I think we've maybe ever been able to say that since we've followed this team. So that's not a good thing. Dombrowski knows that. If we know anything about moderately sized Dick Davey, we know that he's likely going to make a move when a move needs to be made. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if they get a bat in the offseason.
Where do you start? Because everyone wants to start at the top. Everyone wants to go for Giancarlo Stanton. Well, guess what? If you want that guy, say goodbye to Benny Biceps, maybe even goodbye to Devers, Eduardo Rodriguez.
It's everybody.
Maybe Jay Groom. I mean, I mean, that's a franchise that's rebuilding. It's a new ownership. How are you going to sell to the fan base that you just introduced yourself to that the face of the franchise is gone? We're reducing payroll when we already didn't really have a whole lot of payroll to work with in the first place. How do you sell them on that move? You have to like basically fuck the other team right in the ass with that deal. Be like, hey, look at what we got for this guy. So if you're willing to pay that price, then by all means, that's you know. But maybe, you know, they can go out, you trade for Giancarlo Stanton, and I don't know what moves you make to plug those holes, but if they were concerned about luxury tax, they would have to no longer be concerned about luxury tax because he's making a shit ton of money. He does have an opt out. I think it's after 2020, maybe, or 2021. It's around there. So you might be scared about the length of the deal and the $295 million that's on it, but you know, he's going to opt out if he, you know, continues to perform the way that he did this year. But I don't know, maybe JD Martinez, like, he's having a fucking great year. Since he got traded to the Diamondbacks, he's been fucking unbelievable. I think he's got like 34, 35 home runs. So there's someone out there that they can go out and get. But the other thing too is you're still going to have to make a trade, I would say, because Benintendi, he's locked in. You know, you have Jackie Bradley, not a free agent for a few more years. Mookie, it would have to be like a first baseman because Mitch Moreland is really the only guy that isn't up at the end of the year. You have Bogarts, you have Devers, you have Pedroia, and then you have the two catchers. So it's going to have to be a first baseman again, which is the same problem that they were faced with last year.
My favorite race right now in baseball, some will mention the NL Central, maybe even the AL East at some point, but Giancarlo Stanton's home runs to Hanley Ramirez RBIs is by far my favorite thing going. Giancarlo's only one back, man. He has 54 dongs, and Hanley has 55 RBIs. So this is going to be a serious thing to follow as we go along. If he can get more homers than your cleanup hitter's RBIs, that is a nightmare.
That's a problem. That's what they call in the business, that's a fucking problem. So that is not what you want to see from your cleanup hitter turned number seven hitter. I don't want to make this like a negative show. Like, we're being honest here. You know, these are real problems that you're probably not going to hear about on the radio because, you know, it's football season. So they're going to be talking about, oh, it's fucking football, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? We're talking baseball here. On the Section 10 podcast, we're talking about the Red Sox because it's almost postseason time. And this sounds like an ad is coming, but it's not. I'm just saying postseason's coming. And I want to be realistic about my expectations here. And I'm trying to remember back to before the season. You know, we were excited about Chris Sale, but I don't think that we confused ourselves into thinking automatic World Series. I was still thinking the Indians were the team to beat. And last night, they won their 19th fucking consecutive game, which, by the way, the people that were like, oh, they're peaking too soon. No, they're just really peaking fucking good.
Nah, they're peaking too soon.
They're just really fucking good. They're winning a lot of games because they're that good. That's what happens when you're really good. And they're only going to get better because once you get Jason Kipnis back and Andrew Miller back and Michael Brantley back and Danny Salazar goes to the bullpen, like, they've won 19 straight without some of their best pieces.
And that team has so much fun. It looks like so much fun over there. I'm watching their lineup just top to bottom. And then you got guys coming in just shutting the door. Oh, it looks like so much fun. I want to be in that fun.
I mean, I don't necessarily think that they're peaking too soon. Like, they're still really fucking good. But I think if you're an Indians fan and you look at what they're doing right now, you're like, God damn it. You couldn't wait like 3 weeks and just postpone this 3 weeks and just tear through the postseason. I would be a little bit peeved and a little bit nervous.
Yeah, I mean,
because you know,
nervous if you're a fucking Dodgers fan,
you know that after like a 19 game winning streak, after a fucking winning streak as impressive as this, you know, no matter what, there is going to be a drop off, and they're going to lose like three or four in a row. Yeah, there is. That always happens. It always happens.
No, it doesn't, because the Rockies had won what, 21 out of 23. Or something like that, 21 out of fucking 20, something
but
like
they
that.
Rode that there, they rode that into the World
Series. They rode that into the World Series, and then they got their fucking dicks cut off by Josh.
Exactly. There was the drop off, and it happened in the World Series. But that's what I'm saying.
I don't know if it was a drop off so much. It was just the Red Sox being a fucking wagon, and you know the National League is just an inferior product, and they go in and face a red hot American League team with fucking David Ortiz and Manny Ramirez in the middle of the lineup.
That's what I'm saying. If you're an Indians fan, you want to be that Rockies team. You want to ride the fucking hot streak into the World Series, not ride it into the playoffs.
Here's the difference between the Rockies and the Indians is that that Rockies team was largely made up of young, inexperienced players who had no idea what the fuck the postseason even was. Even their veteran players like Todd Helton hadn't been there. So now you have a really, really good Indians team that for the most part, the entire team has been together in the postseason. Yeah. Like not even just gone to the postseason, but they went together. And Encarnacion wasn't with the Indians last year, but he has postseason experience. Right. Just asked the fucking Orioles about his postseason experience. So it's, you know, that's a scary fucking team. And I don't have any concerns about, you know, how are they going to play after this winning streak finally ends, if it ever does?
I don't think it's ever going to end. They're just going to win every game the rest of the season.
Win on the table
and sweep through the playoffs. I got to bounce early, Stevie Half Shows, but I can't not talk about Garen Austin. I mean, all right. So Garen, I'm just going to read the tweets here. Garen Austin, I got a lot of notifications last night. I didn't know what the hell was going on. I honestly thought she was like dead or something. Like they were flying in. Garen Austin, car accident, ambulance, ER, testing, teeth in my hands. Today is not glamorous. Then a little later, release from the hospital, going to be okay. Thank you for all the prayers. My face hurts. Hopefully I can get my teeth fixed tomorrow. So I obviously hate Garen Austin. I lead that charge. She's my least favorite person. I think she sucks. But like, what the fuck is going on with Garen Austin? Like what she, so she hits her head on the team plane and gets a concussion. And now she gets in a car accident. She has her teeth in her hands as she's walking into the hospital. Has any sideline reporter ever gotten in more damage? And not just in a season, in their life? Like, I've never remembered anybody that covers even the Red Sox or any teams that we follow getting in this kind of, in these kind of accidents. Like, this is absolutely bananas. And part of me feels, I'm not going to lie, feel a little bad because it makes me feel very awkward when I've been ripping her all season and then she smashes her face in and her teeth are all over the place. But I don't know if you guys had any takes on it, but I just think it's bizarre. I think it's very bizarre that she's gotten in both of these accidents during the course of one season.
Yeah. What was that like character that just gets hurt like all the time?
Eugene. It was Eugene and Hey Arnold. She's like Eugene. Like, yeah. Oh, I'm okay.
I'm okay. I'm okay.
I picture her just coming into the nest and like, I'm okay. Just hanging on.
Oh, it hurts. It hurts.
She's going to be in a full body cast on the sideline by fucking playoff time.
Yeah, she's on the tune squad.
I mean, I felt bad. For all like the terrible things that Steve says about her on this podcast and online and stuff. I don't wish bodily harm on Garen Austin. I hope that she gets better soon.
I know. And so to the people that are like adding me like, oh, I bet this makes you happy. Come on now. I'm not going to be happy their teeth are falling out. We're not going to go that far. I think she's not great at her job. I don't want her to smash her face in. Jeez. So it's an awkward situation. It's a confusing process, but yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. You know what else is a confusing process?
Steve skipping out on half
Steve
shows.
Steve leaving a show early.
Oh, boom. Nailed it. That's what we call it.
That is quite the confusing process when Steve is leaving early.
Also, much like buying tickets online for sports and concerts, because you know what? That's been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show that you want to go to, and none of those older ticket sites want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and they've created an amazing app and a website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is always the first place that I go to when I'm looking for tickets to a game or a concert. Everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparisons for you. They search multiple ticket sites and ensure that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work and you save the time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. And the best part of all is that our listeners get an instant $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. So to do that, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code. The promo code is section10. Enter promo code section10, all one word, 10 at the end. SeatGeek will give you $20 off your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code section10 today.
Bitch, Cooper and Bits.
Bitch, Cooper and Bits.
So obviously being in New York, I have to seek out the Nesson broadcast. It's, you have to make a conscious effort for that, 'cause sometimes we get the opposing team's broadcast, especially when they play the Yankees, you're just stuck with the fucking Yes broadcast, which, you know, I've made comments about before. Yankee fans, very defensive. It's weird. It's weird how, I guess the dynamic is completely different in Boston versus New York, because when people shit on the Nesson broadcast, we usually just join in with them. Like, yeah, like fucking,
right. Like Nesson's not a source of pride for Red Sox fans.
No, like, and it used to be, you know, like the Don Orsillo firing was definitely the cutoff point. I'm pretty sure that, you know, like, we would acknowledge that they would do a lot of corny shit, but yeah. I don't think anyone was like anti Nesson. Like, no one was like actively saying fuck Nesson or anything like that before the Don Orsillo firing. But now it takes a lot to give compliments to Nesson, and, you know, you're watching Yes, and it's just constant, just excuse making for Aaron Judge. Like, it's comedic excuse making. You know, they're talking about how he almost got a base hit, and they're trying to like break down his swing and how it would have been, how it would have looked if he actually got a hit and stuff like that. It's pretty weird. But on Nesson, I do still seek out the broadcast because I just enjoy it better. Obviously, I do like the aspect of getting to know other teams' broadcasts, because there are, you know, like the Indians broadcast is fucking great. I love the Indians broadcast. The Orioles broadcast is okay. I do like that one. The San Francisco Giants have a great broadcast, even though the Red Sox don't play them. But yeah, if you guess, you know, you have the Jerry Remy return, which, thank God Jerry Remy's back. I think he adds, it's not that I don't like, I love Dennis Eckersley. Love Dennis Eckersley. But it just feels looser when Remy is in there, as opposed to, like, that's not what people want. People don't want a professional, uptight, just robotic broadcast. That's not what makes baseball fun. Like, baseball,
of all
sports, know,
baseball, you need, there's so much downtime that you need personality in the booth.
Yes, you do. And it's more like, you know, as baseball fans, I'm sure we can all acknowledge that there are lots of dead points in the game. It's not like hockey. There's not nonstop action. So you need a little flavor in your broadcast. And Remy brings that. So does Dennis Eckersley. I love these three together. I mean, not that Dave O'Brien is really doing anything differently than he normally does. He's just kind of there. Like,
that's the thing, is that if you have a three-man booth and you have two guys, Remy and Eckersley, who have personality,
yes,
then Dave O'Brien doesn't need to force personality. He can just let the other two fucking talk amongst themselves while he fucking recharges his batteries as a robot.
Yeah, it's basically like, all right, me and Eck are going to talk. We're gonna add some flavor to this broadcast. You just tell the blind people at home what's going on. The 2-2. Ground ball to third base. Throw over to first, and he's out. And then Remy and Eck are just like, going on and on and on about like interesting shit. Like, the best part about it is that Remy was a position player and Eckersley was a pitcher.
Yeah.
So they're having these discussions and they're like asking each other questions. It's almost like sitting in on a conversation between, you know, two former major leaguers, and, you know, the position player is trying to act like he's in the batter's box and Eckersley is trying to act like he's on the mound. Like, how am I going to get this guy out? And Remy's talking about, like, oh, what is he going to throw him here? And it's really fucking interesting. And it's not something that you could ever get from just a typical play-by-play guy, not just Dave O'Brien, not to pick on him. If you're not a former major leaguer, you're not going to be able to carry that type of conversation with a Hall of Fame pitcher like Dennis Eckersley. So, you know, Remy's strong suit has always been being able to pick out or point out things that are going on in the game that you would never know were going on otherwise if you didn't play or you weren't out there. And he also knows how to forecast things. You know, like, he'll be like, oh, this is the perfect spot to hit and run, or, oh, this is the guy that you would drop down a bunt for, or this, you know, maybe they'll try the suicide squeeze here. And then they do. Like, he's great at that. And Dennis Eckersley is just great at getting inside the mind and the psychology of a pitcher, where it's really fun dynamic to see them sort of, you know, have like a battle of wits as the game is unfolding. And I obviously Remy and Orsillo is the number one preferred duo just for the entertainment factor and the chemistry factor and the comedic factor. But if we can't have Orsillo, I love Remy and Eckersley together in the booth.
Yeah, no, I'm a huge fan. And I mean, it took a long road to actually find a broadcast booth that we were 100% behind with Dave O'Brien at the helm. But I think we finally got here. And I think, like, I mean, as far as Jerry Remy goes, there's no easier way to appreciate what Jerry Remy brings to the booth than not having him there for a couple of months and fucking seeing the trash that they tried to substitute him with. And
well, this is the true test, because last time when Remy was out of the booth last time, we still had Don. So everyone's like, oh, well, he's still funny. Right. Like, we can still watch Don. Now it's like, oh, wow. Like where's Remy? Remy is missing.
Well, yeah. And the problem with that was that Don Orsillo has the charisma to make it work with pretty much not everybody who you stick next to him, but he's able to bring out, I feel like, the best in a color commentator. And that's not the same with Dave O'Brien. Dave O'Brien is by the book, and he needs the other guy to kind of bring out, you know, some personality in him. But I mean, that's not here nor there. I really think Jerry Remy had a couple, like maybe a down year or two where he was just like, this is kind of getting stale or whatever. But in the past few years, he's brought it back and he's been unbelievable. He's been great. He's been providing a ton of value to the booth. And it's just really good to have him back. And yeah, I really like the three-man booth with Eck worked in, because, I mean, I love Eck, but it's still not the same when it's just Eck and Dave O'Brien. So I really, really hope that they stick with the three-man booth.
Yeah, because Eck basically has to be a one-man show, and he does pull that off pretty well. It's just that, like I said, that extra, that added dynamic of Eckersley being able to play off of Remy being the position player, and Eckersley being the Hall of Fame pitcher. It's just super interesting if you're one of those baseball is boring people, or even if you just want like a diehard baseball fan, it's an extra element. Like, you get to watch the game, but then you also get to listen in on, you know, two guys who played the game, who can sort of, if you're a casual fan, they can put you inside the mind of these players. And it's almost like, to an extent, it's almost like when you're watching a movie with the director's commentary on. Like, that's what you're getting. It's fucking great.
I've never really understood the director's commentary thing. Why would you want to watch a movie with just these fucking people talking over what's going on?
If you've seen the movie a million times and you're like a diehard fan of it,
yeah,
it's like you can get some extra inside info.
Still weird.
It's a little weird. You know what else is pretty weird?
What's that?
That would be that the Red Sox went into this season, and every time that all my inaccurate tweets, I just leave there. I'm never going to delete a tweet when I know that people know that it's out there and they're going to retweet it every time that something goes wrong and makes it look stupid. I just let them do it. But I tweeted something like at the American League, like, you're fucked. And it was a picture of David Price, Rick Porcello, and Chris Sale. We went into this season thinking that the Red Sox had three aces. You know, they had fucking David Price, the Cy Young runner-up the year before he got to Boston. Chris Sale, who's finished, in the top five in the Cy Young, like, the last, like, 5 years straight. And then you had Rick Porcello, the reigning Cy Young Award winner. And that was your three-man rotation. Well, David Price goes down in spring, and he only makes 11 starts. Still not optimistic that he's going to make any sort of... I would be shocked if he made a start the rest of the year. I can still see him, I guess, coming back to pitch out of the bullpen. But even then, I don't know. Like, Fernando Abad has pitched decent enough to where I wouldn't mess with David Price coming back and fucking up that elbow even more so that you don't even have 2018 with him. But then you have Rick Porcello, the reigning Cy Young Award winner. And we are now having conversations about whether or not he'll even, he's healthy, but we're having conversations about whether or not he will even be in a postseason rotation for the Boston Red Sox, because Doug Fister has outpitched Rick Porcello pretty much. I mean, he's only been here. He took over for David Price in the rotation on July 28th, I believe. And he has like a 2.79 ERA over that span. Drew Pomeranz has the 2.74. So those are the two top guys. Even Chris Sale has not performed as well as those two. And then like Rick Porcello's ERA over that span is like almost 5. And on the whole year, it's just bad. Like however you cut up Rick Porcello, he did have a good run from like July for like a month or two there. But, you know, he gave up the 7 earned runs a couple starts ago, and then he was only able to give you 5 innings this last time out, albeit he did give up 2 earned runs, so it wasn't terrible. He still gave you a chance to win, but, you know, only lasting 5 innings. So Doug Fister, a guy that the Red Sox picked up off of waivers, could make your postseason rotation over last year's Cy Young Award winner, PD Analytics. Are you comfortable with a postseason rotation of Chris Sale? And even like, we're not even talking about this, Drew Pomeranz is your number two going into the season. If I had told you, oh yeah, I mean, Drew Pomeranz is obviously going to be your number two starter. Like that would have been like a joke. Like yeah. If we said that in March or January, yeah. So Red Sox just got Chris Sale. What's the postseason rotation going to be? Chris Sale, Drew Pomeranz, and Doug Fister. Like, That's
preposterous. It's preposterous.
Yeah, but that's what it's going to be.
Preposterous to even think about right now. Like, it's
not even. All right, so that's the big thing, though. That's what the postseason rotation is going to be. But like, do you feel good about it? Because I do.
Do you? I mean, yeah. I just can't really get past the fact that like there's a very strong chance, or like a decent chance, that Doug Fister replaces the reigning Cy Young Award winner. Like by choice, like not by injury, by him being the better pitcher. I don't know. Do I feel good about it? No, because as good as Pomeranz has been and as good as Fister has been, you want the fucking guy who's making a boatload of money and is the reigning Cy Young Award winner. You want that guy in your fucking playoff rotation. You want him there.
And if he doesn't pitch well enough to earn that spot, and one guy does, I mean, it's not like Fister is not like some shit bum that came out of nowhere and has no track record. Like he's pitched in the postseason.
Yeah, no,
before.
I know he's
like,
had he's yeah well he's to had level before. He's had track. He's had success in the past, but I don't know. Like, is there a chance that they both wind up at there? Do you go Sale, Pomeranz, Porcello, Fister in a 4-man rotation?
Not in a 5-game series, but in a 7-game series, yeah. I mean, you're going to see Porcello regardless.
If you get there.
But yeah, I mean, like this is what happened in Detroit when Porcello was a part of those rotations that had Scherzer, Verlander, and Price, and even Anibal Sanchez. Like he was the low man on the totem pole there. Yeah, and you know, so good for him for finding a new home in Boston and then winning a Cy Young Award to be able to stand out on his own, you know, being in a rotation with that many guys that were really fucking good. But yeah, I sort of look at this as what?
Good for him for getting that Cy Young Award to lock up the fourth spot in the postseason rotation the next year.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, that's the thing is that, I guess we're making a big deal. Like before, we were spoiled because, you know, you had that run in 2004. I mean, it definitely wasn't in 2003. In 2003, they went the full 5 games against Oakland. And that was like the Derek Lowe suck it series when he struck out, what was it, Terrence Long, and told him to suck it after they clinched the ALDS. But in 2004, they swept the Angels. And then in 2007, they swept the Angels. In 2008, did they sweep the Angels, or did they win? Like, did they take? They may have lost one game. So like they have had this run where it was like, oh, the Red Sox are in the postseason. Who are they playing in the ALCS? Because they just the ALDS wasn't even like a fucking thought. Like it was just, we're gonna sweep whoever it is. And then in 2013, they played Tampa. They lost like one game in that. Like they gave like a walk off home run to some schmuck, and then they just won the next game and they won the series. So yeah, the ALDS historically has not been a big factor, a big hump for them to get over. It was last year because they got swept. So yeah, I think there's a different outlook here with the division series, and that you have to take a little bit more seriously. And here's one factor that people aren't discussing yet, but it definitely could be a thing. If the Red Sox draw Houston in the first round, they play the Astros for the last four games of the regular season. So then they would go into the division series right after that. There's a chance that they could play the Astros for nine straight games.
That's pretty ridiculous. And not ideal if you're the Red Sox. Like,
no, I mean, it's not ideal for either team. Like, you don't want, you know, the other team seeing your best pitchers that many times in a row. So if, I mean, the Astros, that it's more disadvantage to the Red Sox because the Astros are going to have the division clinched by then. So they're probably not even going to use their best pitchers in that series. They're just going to throw schmucks out there from the September call-ups or something. But if the Red Sox are still fighting for the division, which is very realistic possibility, 3.5 game lead with 19 games to go, that could come down to that series for them to clinch. Yeah, that's problematic. Playing the Astros nine games in a row if the division series goes the full five games, which also another added element to that, you know, you play a team that many times, especially consecutively, that's when like the brawls happen. That's when, you know, you get tired of seeing their faces and you get tired of competing against the same group and you haven't switched it up in a while. That's when, you know, I think that low key, you could see, you know, not a rivalry. It's too soon to build a rivalry in a small stretch, but you could see the start of one. Definitely.
Also, that final series is at Fenway, right?
I believe so. Yes.
Thank God, because that would be an awful thing for this team, is if they had to stay in Houston for however long it was. That would have been horrible for this team.
All right. Well, you know, this is we've got 19 games left. It's shit or get off the pot time. The Red Sox have Oakland for three, then they go to Tampa for three, they're in Baltimore for three, they're in Cincinnati for three. And then they finish out the season at home with three against the Blue Jays. And like we said, four against the Astros. So if that's who they draw in the first round, you're looking at potentially at minimum seven games in a row, at minimum seven games in a row against the Astros, potentially nine. That's how they finish out. So they do have a favorable schedule in terms of being able to close this out and win the division, because no one wants to play in that one game wild card. I love watching them. I definitely love watching them as long as my team's not in it. I could not be like, wow, we played 162 games for the chance to play in a do or die one game playoff. And it definitely, like I said, it gives you incentive to win the division. Like that's what, before they was really like, okay, we won the wild card. It's basically the same thing as winning the division. We just go in, play whoever the fuck we want. Like the 2004 Red Sox won the wild card. People forget that. It doesn't matter. They just go in, kick the Angels' asses. Now they're in the ALCS against the Yankees. It's like that's how it works.
It's like it's conceivable that the Red Sox could be in the wild card game this year, which I don't think it'll happen. But like it's way closer than I'd want it to be right now.
That is a hot take for PD Analytics.
How is it a hot take? They're fucking three games up.
Yeah, it's
conceivable. I think that their cupcake schedule down the stretch makes it a little bit easier, especially with Houston probably locking up most likely having that shit locked up by the time that rolls around. I don't know. It's you want a little bit more distance than three games back with 19 games left to go.
Yeah. It's definitely tighter than I hoped that it would be, which is not the first time I said that.
Hey, I don't know why we would hope that it's less tight.
Maybe you got a little
maybe you get a little trouble with just squeezing
in there.
Too
much girth. Too much girth.
A little tight squeeze.
Too much girth over there. Back in too much heat.
So
we want to say thanks to our producer, Steve Peralt, for bailing on the show. PD Analytics just sticking out the show. 11 in a row for him. Fucking
carrying a load.
Steve, what a turn of events, my man. You're bailing on shows early. You got PD, Iron Man Pete, sticking out these shows for 11 in a row. He's here from the opening segment until the very end. He's going down with the ship every time.
Also, side note, last episode, I put out a call. I made a little joke like, hey, if you appreciate my Iron Man streak, my Venmo's Pete Blackburn. A lot of people have been sending me money, and not even like there's been a lot of the 69 cents thing, which is funny. And I like that. That's kind of what it's always been every time we throw our Venmos out there. But there's been a few people that have literally gave me like $10 and $15, and which is wild. I appreciate it. Thank you. I feel bad taking that much money for just being on 10 episodes in a row. So I'm going to donate the money that I've gotten from the Venmo donations. I think I'm going to give it to the Jimmy Fund, because it's a Red Sox podcast. I figured that's the closest link to a charity or whatever. I thought about maybe like the hurricane relief, but I think the Jimmy Fund is more fitting for a Red Sox podcast. So that money is going to go to the Jimmy Fund. Thank you very much for the people who donated way more than they should have.
Like, so here's the thing is, you know, you're doing a great thing by, you could easily just pocket all that money and no one would ever know how much you actually got from the listeners. So you're going to give it to the Jimmy Fund, but just be prepared that for the people, oh, I can't believe you donate to the fucking hurricane relief.
Yeah. Sorry. It's a drop in the bucket for like the Jimmy Fund to get like 50, 60 bucks, but it's
like you'd fix
it's
like
a Red Sox thing. You'd and fix it's like sick one kids. So
yeah. Christ, man. Let him donate his money. Let him donate your money to the Jimmy Fund.
Yes. I'm donating it's your money. Thank doing you a good very thing. Much, everybody.
Yeah. You can follow the show on Twitter at Section 10 Pod, on Instagram at Section 10 Podcast. You can fucking follow PD Donations at Pete Blackburn, the archive for the Section 10 Podcast. All 124 episodes can be found on Section10Podcast.com. Subscribe on iTunes, rate the show, leave a review. And if you have the best one of the week, Steven will read it every Thursday, and that's if he's actually here. That's if he doesn't bail on us. You want to tell a friend about the show? Be like, hey, postseason's right around the corner. The Red Sox are going to be back in this shit. Maybe they're going to be division champs. Maybe they might actually make it out of the first round. Maybe they might win a game in the postseason this year. We don't know. That'd be great if they did. I'd have fun. You'd have fun. Your mom would have fun. Be a great time. So tell a friend. Tell your mom. Tell your mom about the Section 10 podcast. Because, you know, sometimes it gets a little lonely around here, and maybe there's a little company, and I don't know. Your mom seems like real mom generous.
Mom bakes those time. Chocolate chip cookies, and she brings them over, gives me a warm glass of milk, tucks me in, and shows me her boobies.
You can download the SeatGeek app. Use the promo code Section10. You get $20 off your first purchase. Right there, right in the app. You don't have to fucking wait for it. You just put in the promo code Section 10. You go to buy your fucking tickets to Barney on Ice or whatever the fuck it is that you're going to see. And it takes $20 off the purchase right then and there. If they were $69, you take 20 off of that. It's $49. That's math. Okay? So be sure to download that SeatGeek app. Use the promo code Section 10. Peter? Do you have any final thoughts? This being your 11th consecutive show that you've been on, and you haven't missed a single minute of any of them.
Yeah, I just wish that Steve Peralt, who's the producer of the show, would show half as much commitment to the program as much as I have lately. Just a really disappointing performance. I know we talked about disappointing performances earlier in the show. I think if you're gonna list Mookie Betts, you're gonna list Hanley Ramirez, you're gonna list Rick Porcello, you're gonna list Xander Bogaerts. I think you gotta to finish off the group and throw Steve Peralta in that list as well.
Agreed. Agreed. PD Analytics just grinding. Grinding as the Red Sox are going down the stretch here. They're fighting for a division title. PD Analytics is fighting for podcast ratings and downloads and subscriptions and reviews. Meanwhile, Steve Peralta, our producer, is just taking a vacation. He's probably somewhere in the Bahamas right now. It's very sad. Very sad. Not a team group effort. Also, if you've made it this far on the podcast, you deserve to know a little something, something. You deserve to know a little something, something. So, next week, major changes are coming to the Section 10 podcast. Major changes. So, if you want to know what those major changes are, well, too bad.
Hit the subscribe button and stick around.
Yeah. And I'd love to tell you what those changes are. But I wouldn't love to do.
Oh, shit. Correct.
Woo! Hey!
Willpower. Power.
Be everywhere, everybody know me. Super, super fresh with a dope style. Honey on my wrist, couple carrots on my neck. Givenchy, keep the chickens in check. All these car keys, drive the chickens to my crib. Drew Hill, got somebody sleeping on my bed. She give me IQ, that means she get ahead. I just give her beats, I don't give her bread. Cause we be in the club, bottles on deck. And goddammit, I'm feeling myself. Cause I'ma get it all, and I'ma throw it out. Like goddammit, I'm feeling myself. Look up in the mirror look at me. The mirror be like, baby, you the shit. Goddammit, you the shit, you the shit, you the shit. Goddammit, you the shit, goddammit, you the shit, you the shit. What's
happening, Will? Wow, it was like the first time he ever gave up a run.
What shit is that?
I guess they're doing work above me. That's perfect timing. Are you fucking kidding me, dude?
Awesome, man.
Maybe like a little heads up. Hey, we're going to be doing some work upstairs.
We're going to be recording a podcast, smashing your ceiling all morning.
If you want to like plan around it, I'm going to be bashing a hammer into the floor right above you at 10:12 tomorrow. So just a little heads up.
Classic New York City.
Still Minute Maid Park. Okay. Yes.
I love it when stadium names don't change for a long time.
Yeah.
All right. I wouldn't want to cuff ya because I don't have any teeth.
Sad.